They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Another corporate earnings season begins. Outlook does look good.
But where are the profits coming from?
Marketplace Midday Update is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for checking out the podcast from Marketplace.org. It's Monday, the 11th day of April.
Coming up, we'll find out what to watch for as companies tell us how they're doing.
Checking in with Japan 1 month after the earthquake and tsunami.
And U.S. Airways giveth. And U.S. Airways taketh away.
Oh, yes, they do. It's all just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Make it a working lunch. Listen to the Marketplace Midday Update podcast for the day's top business headlines. Subscribe on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
First quarter earnings season kicks off today with aluminum giant Alcoa releasing its numbers. Now, trends in corporate profits have been pretty robust lately. So why are companies doing so much better these days? Here's Marketplace's Jennifer Collins.
Profits are gushing into U.S. companies from their overseas operations, up 40% in the last 5 years. Harm Bandholz is a senior economist at UniCredit.
If the U.S. companies wouldn't have used their money to buy back stocks or to invest abroad, investment spending in the U.S. would be 70% higher right now.
70% higher.
That's a big number.
Partly, he says, companies see developing countries are attractive with their speedy growth rates. And Harbor Advisory's Jack DeGann says that growth is snowballing.
The more cash that builds up overseas, the more money there is there for them to expand in other economies, not here.
Companies like Coca-Cola, Caterpillar, DuPont have been hiring thousands of workers internationally. If the investment stayed here, some analysts say 500,000 more jobs would have been created in the U.S. last year. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
Let's get some analysis on earnings season now with Julia Coronado, chief economist with the investment bank BNP Paribas. She's with us from New York, as she is every Monday. Good morning, Julia.
Good morning.
Well, first of all, how are rising prices that we're seeing in things like oil and food and raw materials going to impact companies' bottom lines this quarter?
Well, we're going to see different impacts depending on the company. So for a company like Alcoa that you mentioned, they actually produce commodities. They're an aluminum producer,
right.
So they're benefiting from the higher prices. So companies, agricultural and energy companies, are really going to benefit from the higher prices. We're going to see very, very strong results from them. On the other hand, more retail-facing companies are going to have a harder time, and we're really going to be listening to how well they're managing passing along these higher costs, or whether their margins are starting to get squeezed.
And Julia, last quarter, the big story was that most of the growth for U.S. companies was coming from overseas. Is that going to be the case again this quarter?
Yes, I think that theme is still definitely with us. We did see some better spending numbers in recent months in the U.S., but it pales in comparison to what's happening in Asia and Latin America. So companies that are more globally facing are going to do a whole lot better than those that are more reliant on the domestic market.
And taking all of that into account, how are U.S. companies doing right now, and what does it mean for ordinary Americans?
Well, the corporate sector has been doing extraordinarily well. They've really managed to regain profitability. And are actually seeing record profits. Does that have pass through to the rest of us, to the man on the street? It does. They have been the sector that's been adding jobs and investing. So there has been definitely a benefit from that strong corporate sector to the U.S. economy.
Julia Coronado, chief economist with the investment bank BNP Paribas. Thanks so much as always.
My pleasure.
Well, the federal government is open for business this morning thanks to a deal on Friday night to cut $38 billion from this year's federal budget. And now we can all brace for a fight over the nation's debt ceiling. We're expected to reach the legal limit on how much money the government can borrow as soon as next month. Marketplace's David Brancaccio reports.
Congressional Republicans want more curbs on federal spending before they agree to raise the federal government's official credit limit. At a meeting this weekend in Bretton Woods, New Hampshire, on the future of the financial system, former Treasury Secretary Lawrence Summers says even talk about defaulting is hazardous.
The United States not meeting its debt obligations for even a single nanosecond is like a child playing with matches in a room full of dynamite.
Currently, the law says the government cannot borrow more than $14.25 trillion. If the debt ceiling isn't raised, the resulting uncertainty could drive up interest rates for government and consumers. Every few years, negotiations over the debt ceiling get down to the wire. The Treasury Department is working on a backup plan that could delay the moment of reckoning until early July. In Bretton Woods, New Hampshire, I'm David Brancaccio for Marketplace.
The New York Stock Exchange said today it will reject a hostile takeover bid by NASDAQ and the Intercontinental Exchange. NASDAQ just last week offered more than $11 billion for the NYSE, hoping to outbid Germany's stock exchange.
Marketplace's Elisa Roth is with us from our New York bureau to explain all this drama that we have going on. Good morning, Elisa.
Good morning.
Now, this sounds like a good deal. What's wrong with the NASDAQ bid?
On paper, it does sound good. NASDAQ is offering $11.3 billion, which is about 16% more than what the Deutsche Börse, the German stock exchange you mentioned, offered a couple of weeks ago. So it's a lot. It is a lot more money. Mm-hmm. But the NYSE's management says a deal to merge the NYSE and the NASDAQ will never make it past the antitrust regulators. And the NASDAQ deal would also involve a lot of cost cutting down the line, which would probably involve job cuts. So it's pretty likely that politicians here in New York would also put up a big fight over the deal.
All right, so then what's the next step? What happens now?
Well, the fight over the NYSE and really over stock exchanges all over the world is just starting. We're in this period of big consolidations and mergers, and the exchange landscape is really changing. But that's sort of a mid to long-term issue. Right now, what we're going to see is NASDAQ going directly to the NYSE's shareholders and trying to convince them that they'll come out ahead by supporting the NASDAQ bid. No matter what happens there, though, it's not like the NYSE Deutsche Börse deal is sealed either. It's also going to have to face some really tough questions from the antitrust people, and not just here in the U.S., but in Europe, too.
All right. Marketplace's Elisa Roth reporting from New York. Elisa, thanks.
You're welcome.
Ford reported strong car sales in China last month, up 20% for March. GM sales up about 1%.
And MasterCard Spending Pulse says gasoline sales have fallen for 5 straight weeks. In other words, Jeremy, people are driving less now that prices are above $3.50 a gallon in all but one state.
I wish I lived in that state, Steve.
Do you know which state it is?
I do. It's Wyoming.
It's Wyoming. Yes, it is. The perfectly rectangular state.
Cheap gas. More numbers anytime at marketplace.org. Just go to the numbers section.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Monday, April 11th. Hello, I'm Steve Giotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. Let's get to the global perspective now. What's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world? Well, Steve, it's hard to believe, but today is the one-month anniversary of the huge earthquake and tsunami that struck Japan.
Yeah.
Another big aftershock marked the occasion this morning. Marketplace's Scott Tong has been traveling around the areas that were hardest hit, and he joins us now from Tokyo with more on the rebuilding effort. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning.
Well, first of all, sounds like there was a pretty big aftershock just today.
I was riding in the car on an elevated freeway, and suddenly the car starts doing the slalom left and right. And then after the wobbling stopped, we looked up at the light poles, and they were still wobbling as we drove by. But since everything in Japan seems designed for earthquakes, I was just assuming that the bridge was the same way. But here's the thing about what's happening in Japan. The announcer on the radio came on and said, you know, this is a 6 or a 7. And then the people in the car with me said, only a 6.
Huh.
Kind of on with the business of Japan, and you hear about that everywhere.
Now, you just got back from the place that was damaged the most by the big 9.0 quake and the resulting tsunami. Tell us what you saw there.
It's like one person described it to me before I went there. You drive down a beautiful coast, turn the corner, and there's Armageddon. Maybe 20% of the buildings in this one port city are still standing. There are commercial fishing trawlers, giant boats, dumped onto the shore like they're bath toys. But here's the good part. In the city of Sendai, half the stuff in the restaurants is already back on the menu and available. Half the convenience stores have fresh bread already. factories that have power and are intact, they're not just making their own stuff. They're helping their suppliers or their customers to make their things so they can revive the whole industrial ecosystem. And they tell us, tell the world that manufacturing is still sound. It's still the best in the world. There are no two-headed, radiated Japanese fish swimming around. That the Japanese brand is still intact.
Marketplace's Scott Tong in Tokyo. Thanks, Scott.
You're welcome.
And you can see a slideshow of the rebuilding in Japan at marketplace.org.
That's got to be awful with all the aftershocks there in the last month. A report out today in the UK recommends British banks should do a couple of things to avoid a future banking collapse. Number one, raise a lot of extra cash. Number two, separate their deposits from their trading activities. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us from London with the latest on that. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
How tough is this plan on those banks?
Not as tough as the banks feared. I mean, as you say, they won't be forced to hive off their investment banking operations, which are risky but very profitable. So this will not be a resurrection of the U.S. Glass-Steagall Act in Britain that was introduced in the U.S. after the Depression. Here, deposit-taking and investment banking will just be ring-fenced from each other within banking organizations. The banks are going to have to, as you say, raise more capital, and the capital will cost more. This will make the business of banking more expensive and a bit more conservative, which economists say would be no bad thing.
All right. And banks in England, Stephen, Barclays in particular, had been threatening to pull out of London if these regulations were too strict. Any sign that could happen?
Well, this is only an interim report, and there's going to be a lot of lobbying between now and publication of the full report after the summer. But Jan Randolph of IHS Global Insight says he doesn't think there will be any exodus from London.
I think it's highly unlikely. The bank share prices this morning indicate that the banks are basically, they feared the worst, but it didn't happen, and most of them are likely to stay.
The point is, he says, the banks are going to be facing tighter restrictions in all the major economies where they operate. If they do pull out of London, where would they go?
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
A new World Bank report out this morning recommends re-evaluating the aid developed countries give to developing countries. More focus, the report says, should be placed on building stable governments and institutions. From London, here's the BBC's John Bithrie.
The World Bank report challenges a common view on how billions of dollars in aid ought to be spent. It says a quarter of the world's population lives in fragile or failed states, and so far there's been too little focus on rebuilding them through accountable government and strong legal systems. Report author Sarah Cliff says if this isn't improved, other spending won't work.
It's much easier for countries to get help with their militaries than it is with their police forces or justice systems, and much easier for them to get help with growth, health or education. Our analysis would indicate that that should change.
The report also calls for more focus on job creation to mitigate poverty, to help alleviate the kind of dissatisfaction we've seen across the Middle East. But the report has its critics who say the World Bank has got this the wrong way round and aid should be spent on meeting basic needs like healthcare before anything else. In London, I'm the BBC's John Bithrie for Marketplace.
A lot of people shop online for clothing or shoes. Have you done that before, Jeremy?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You've bought things like a nice shirt or something like that?
Yeah.
A pair of shoes, right? Okay, well, there's a problem, though, with that. You can't try it on.
Exactly. That's the,
It says, maybe it says large, or in my case, extra large.
You never know which size to take.
You just don't know if it's going to fit or not. So apparently, and I just can't believe this, some shoppers, Jeremy, will go to the physical store, right? They'll go to whatever brand X department store, try on a piece of clothing from a name brand designer or whatever in the dressing room, and then buy the exact same outfit online.
Seems sort of reasonable in terms of trying to get your...
Really?
Yeah, I mean, you can try it on.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you know what the department stores in Australia are doing to counter this.
They probably don't love that, do they?
No, they don't. They don't. As a matter of fact, they're charging a fee now for using their fitting rooms to try on the clothing that you're likely not going to buy from that store. So, in other words... it could be anywhere from $40 to $50.
Wow.
For a fitting room fee.
They're taking a cue from the airlines.
They are. They're feeing
charged
us.
For everything.
Yes. But that fee, of course, is fully refundable if you buy the clothing from the store. You're listening to the Midday Update for Monday, April 11th. I'm Steve Chiotakis on Twitter, by the way, at Radio Chio.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson on Twitter, at Jeremy Hobson. Oil is hovering around $112 a barrel today. Prices have jumped more than 30% since mid-February because of tensions in places like Libya. And those tensions aren't just affecting oil prices. As Christopher Worth reports now, the lucrative Mediterranean bluefin tuna industry swims right through Libya.
The old seaside town of Sète is generally known in France as a charming fishing port. But it also harbors a few open secrets, namely Libyan-flagged tuna fishing vessels docked alongside its main canals.
Boat Gaddafi.
This boat is Gaddafi's, says fisherman Gambo Meraki. His boat is anchored next to two Libyan ships registered under a company believed to be controlled by the Gaddafi regime. How these Libyan boats ended up here is an interesting story. Nearly a decade ago, French tuna fishermen in Sète are said to have begun selling their boats to Libyan companies as traditional stocks of bluefin dropped and Libya developed its own tuna industry. Miriam Potter is with the French environmental group Robin Dubois. She says Libya has become a black hole for the illegal fishing of endangered bluefin tuna, and that under the deals, the French ships may fly Libyan flags, but they're still operated by the same French fishermen who sold them.
What it does is it buys the French fishermen access to waters off the coast of Libya because it's a very rich spawning ground for bluefin tuna.
Environmental groups are calling on the French government to seize those Libyan ships. But when I met up with Jean-Vier Skinepico, he had a different story about who owns the boats. Skinepico's family has one of the largest tuna fishing operations in Sète. Skinepico asked me to stop recording. Then, he told my interpreter, the boats had never actually been sold to the Libyans.
It's a kind of mutual agreement to tell the government that it's the Libyan boat, in fact it belongs to them, and then they give money to the guy who is supposed to own the ship in Libya.
When I raised this with the French ministry in charge of fisheries, it said it doesn't track whether boats have actually been paid for. But those Libyan ships may not be fishing this year at all. The European Union has called for a suspension of Libya's rights to all bluefin tuna fishing. In Sète, southern France, I'm Christopher Worth for Marketplace.
Lawmakers in Georgia begin to debate a new budget this week, and the state has a gaping budget hole. And as Jim Burris reports from station WABE in Atlanta, some legislators have been calling for a tax on services to bridge the gap.
Georgia lawmakers don't like to talk about increasing taxes, but in the face of at least $1 billion in red ink, they are willing to push tax reform.
This is about fairness and to encourage more investment in all corners of the state.
A while back, Georgia Representative Mickey Chanel and fellow Republicans unveiled a plan to balance the budget. They'd add a tax to most services. But that didn't sit well with the providers of those services, and one by one, many services became exempt.
We're not going to tax haircuts, legal services, AAA memberships, Sam's Clubs, Costco memberships.
Or vet visits, dry cleaning. In the end, only three services remained: satellite TV, used car sales, and car repairs.
My name is Carrie Guthrie, and I'm owner of My Favorite Automotive on DeKalb Avenue in Atlanta.
Standing underneath a hoisted purple Subaru in for suspension repair, Guthrie says a new auto service tax would add $8 or so to this customer's bill. It's an expense she says she'd like to absorb, but just can't.
It's all I can do to stay on DeKalb Avenue and keep the doors open as it is in this economy.
Guthrie feels mom-and-pop auto shops don't have the political clout that other businesses in Georgia are able to wield. Dorothy Brown agrees. She's a law professor at Emory University who specializes in tax policy.
If you're Coca-Cola, this is Georgia, I wouldn't expect there to be a tax on Coke.
That's because Coke is based here. But Colorado and Washington, also faced with budget shortfalls, have passed a soda tax.
And you see states looking at all kinds of ways to raise revenue. So I certainly don't fault Georgia with trying to make sure its budget stays balanced. It's just, how do you do it and whose ox are you going to gore?
The bottom line, whatever services are eventually taxed, taxpayers are going to foot the bill. In Atlanta, I'm Jim Burris for Marketplace.
And finally, Steve, U.S. Airways had a nice gift for its loyal customers last week. It sent them an email giving them 1,000 frequent flyer miles automatically in their accounts for no reason.
That's not easy to get, right?
No, it's very generous of them. Well, until this morning when they actually sent those people an email that said, oops. It literally was titled
oops?
Oops.
Did it really?
U.S. Airways has made a mistake and won't be giving anyone any miles.
Did it really say that?
Yeah,
oops.
Yeah, oops was the subject line. Yeah.
Oops, I did it again.
Oops, no, oops, I accidentally gave you something.
Cue
nice
the
gift.
Britney Spears.
Yeah,
come on.
Really. But you just have to wonder about that. I mean, it doesn't seem like the greatest way to hold up. I mean, if you make a mistake, just give the people.
And frequent flyers are very loyal customers. That's They're right. the ones who, yeah, they want loyalty in return. And I don't think they got it with that.
Don't think so.
Oops.
In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Steve Chiotakis. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.